Support for this public radio podcast comes from the Society for Human Resource Management, which also sponsors PBS's CEO Exchange, online at shrm.org.
This too shall pass.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott J. Gow. Just as there are four stages of grief, there are probably four stages of economic tragedy. Last year, everyone was shocked at how deep the subprime problems ran. Then Wall Street seemed to be in denial that financial companies were really that bad off. Now I think we're somewhere between anger and acceptance that recession is upon us. There's plenty of new bad news again this morning. Bad earnings from Intel and J.P. Morgan Chase. Retail inflation numbers hit a 17-year high in 2007. But investors are trying to move on. In early trading, the Dow has gained 37 points to 12,538. The Nasdaq is down 11, mainly on the Intel numbers. The S&P 500 is up a couple points. Hong Kong shares fell more than 5% today. The Asian markets overall bombed. Tokyo, the Nikkei lost 3.5%. The European markets are rallying a bit here late in the day. Who's going to win the Republican presidential nomination? Who knows? Three states, three different winners. Mitt Romney won in Michigan yesterday. The Republican National Committee begins its winter meetings today. You'd think a unified front on the economy would be at the top of the agenda. Only the party doesn't seem very unified about that. More now from Jeremy Hobson.
Last week, New York Times columnist David Brooks proclaimed supply-side economics had a good run, but continual tax cuts can no longer be the centerpiece of Republican economic policy. Well, that's one view. Stephen Moore, senior economics writer for the Wall Street Journal editorial board, has another.
If they hope to win in 2008, they have to run as a tax cut party.
Moore says merging that message with the now popular change message may mean proposing a flat tax. And he says to capture the all-important middle class vote.
Part of the Republican challenge here is to scare voters about what Democrats would do if they take over all the levers of power.
Well, I think Republicans just need to tell the truth about what the Democrats will do, and the truth is scary enough.
That's former Republican House Speaker Newt Gingrich, who has authored a book called Real Change. He, too, thinks a supply-side model remains the best option for the GOP.
I think you'll find people decide, looking to the future, that maybe they don't want a big government, a big union, big regulation, high-tax future.
On the other hand, a stay-the-course economic platform may prove just as unpopular with voters intent on change. In Washington, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
They say to choose your battles, and here's the one Burger King has chosen. It's with tomato pickers in southern Florida. They want a penny more per pound. It would double their wages and cost BK about $250,000 a year. But for the past 2 years, Burger King has stood firm and said no. From our America's desk at WLRN, Dan Gretsch has the latest developments.
Just after Thanksgiving, the Florida tomato pickers held a large rally outside Burger King headquarters in Miami. Now it's surfaced that 3 weeks later, BK sent a note to suppliers saying it may no longer buy tomatoes from southwestern Florida. Spokesperson Kiva Silversmith says the letter's just a normal part of the company's planning.
Our contingency planning is based on a variety of issues, a freeze being one of them, which took place, hurricane issues, which are always an issue, as well as possible labor conflict.
McDonald's and Yum Brands, which owns Taco Bell, have agreed to the penny per pound raise. But Burger King has refused, says Mark Rodriguez with the Student Farm Workers Alliance.
Once again, instead of sitting down with the workers and coming up with a solution to the problem, they're trying to skirt responsibility.
Florida supplies 80% of the country's winter tomatoes. Burger King's only alternative may be to buy tomatoes from Mexico. In Miami, I'm Dan Gretsch for Marketplace.
This is the Morning Report for Wednesday, January 16th on Marketplace.org. Along with everyone else involved in subprime, hedge funds lost money last quarter, a 33% loss according to hedge fund research. But it wasn't a bad year for the hedgers. Hedge funds returned more than 10% in 2007 on average. And some folks are pretty bullish on 2008. Ashley Milne-Tite has more.
Institutional investors are expected to park more money in hedge funds this year. Frank Sanderson is an analyst with securities research firm Lipper. He says hedge fund managers could employ a number of winning strategies, including investing in companies in financial trouble.
The trick amongst hedge fund managers and the skill is picking the right company or picking the right sector, and obviously then holding that in the majority of cases until the market picks up.
Others will make money by successfully betting that a company will default. Chris Cutler of Manager Analysis Services says some of 2007's most successful hedge funds scored using just that tactic.
The subprime wave was a tremendous macroeconomic distressed bet, and you know, a few names have been in the paper about how successful they were.
Such as hedge fund Paulson & Company, which former Fed chief Alan Greenspan has just joined as an advisor. I'm Ashley Milne-Tite for Marketplace.
An airline merger is almost certainly in the offing. But with who? Northwest and Delta have started talking, according to a Minnesota congressman. Jim Oberstar says he met with two Northwest executives yesterday. They told him if Delta tries to merge with United, Northwest will look for another partner. The Transportation Department is trying to do something about airport congestion. This week, it announced a new scheme for landing fees that airports charge the airlines. Right now, those fees are based on the weight of the plane. Now, the airlines will be charged based on when the flight lands. Nancy Marshall-Genzer explains.
The idea is if airlines have to pay more to land during airport rush hours, they'll spread their flights out more evenly.
I'm very skeptical this will work. I believe it will not.
Airline analyst Andrew Watterson of Oliver Wyman says airlines will keep packing flights into morning and evening rush hours because that's when people want to travel. But University of Portland finance professor Richard Gritta says the new policy might ease congestion a little because airlines will pass the higher landing fees onto rush hour passengers. That'll force frugal flyers onto off-peak flights.
And I think people might just say, well, if it's cheaper to fly at this particular time because the fees are lower, I'm going to do it.
But Gritta says this isn't a permanent solution. Ultimately, he says, we need to replace our antiquated system of tracking planes by radar with a new satellite-based air traffic control system. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
Amtrak's fortunes are changing for the better. Ridership is up, and now Congress is thinking about helping Amtrak out, i.e., more federal money. Daniel Carson has more from Washington.
On Amtrak, you can travel over 500 destinations.
People fed up with traffic jams and soaring gas prices are getting the message. In fact, Amtrak has been chugging towards a record number of passengers. Almost 26 million rode on trains last year.
Everybody is seeing the different economic boundary conditions with high energy prices, with a much higher sensitivity toward environmental footprint, land use footprint. And I think on those fronts, all those movements help us.
Amtrak CEO Alex Kumon says ticket sales are up. For years, Amtrak was the poster child for a government enterprise that couldn't pay its own way. But now Congress is shifting away from that demand. Ross Capon is with the National Association of Railroad Passengers.
The highway system as a whole is not profitable. The aviation system as a whole is not profitable. Amtrak is basically the entire ball of wax. The rail equivalent of the air traffic control system, the airport authorities, and the carriers. They're holding passenger rail up to a standard that no one asks the other forms of transportation to meet.
Now the Senate wants to infuse $12 billion into Amtrak. It wants greater efficiency, not profits. But some critics, like Florida Congressman John Mica, say Amtrak needs a serious overhaul to provide high-speed service like European trains that travel 120 miles an hour. The government isn't willing to spend that kind of money, so he says Amtrak should be privatized. That way, Amtrak's Acela service between Washington and New York City could become a moneymaker.
Amtrak's Acela goes at an average of 83 miles an hour. Think of the revenue that would be generated. Think how many people would utilize a true high-speed rail service getting from New York to Washington in an hour and a half.
President Bush has said he wants to privatize parts of Amtrak. So far, he isn't saying whether he'll veto the measure. In Washington, I'm Danielle Carson for Marketplace.
We'll be right back. We're waiting on last year's final numbers, but the U.S. trade deficit with China is going to set a record. It'll be over $250 billion. Commentator Robert Reich says neither China nor its currency are to blame.
Don't be surprised if in 2008 Congress threatens China with tariffs unless it does more to raise the value of its currency against the dollar, and thereby, it is assumed, save good American jobs. But the trade deficit numbers are deceptive. Much of what we buy from China today, we used to buy from Japan, South Korea, and Taiwan. But now, parts from these countries go to China for final assembly. And because the goods are exported from China, they're counted as Chinese. Subtract what's merely assembled in China, and more than half of China's trade deficit disappears. China is also sucking in vast quantities of cheap components from places in Southeast Asia where wages are lower than in China: Thailand, the Philippines, Indonesia, Vietnam. So if China's currency rises, and as a result it's more expensive to export stuff from there, where do you suppose both parts and assembly operations will move? To these lower-wage countries. Remember, we're dealing with global companies seeking the lowest costs from anywhere around the world, and they're often headquartered here in the United States. Even if the trade deficit with China narrowed, America's overall trade deficit with Asia could very likely grow. The real problem is that America as a whole is living beyond its means. If anything, China has been an enabler, lending us heaps of money to continue our buying binge, including homes with low-interest mortgages. That binge seems to be coming to a close. If American politicians succeed in forcing China to raise its currency another 10 or 20%, the binge will end faster than you can say the word stagflation. But not all Americans feel they've been living beyond their means, and here's why Congress is feeling pressured to do something about the trade deficit with China. Adjusted for inflation, the median wage is below what it was in 2000. Almost all the benefits of American economic growth have been going to the very top. But China shouldn't be scapegoated for this either.
Robert Reich was Labor Secretary under President Clinton. His new book is called Super Capitalism. If you'd like to share your thoughts with us and with other listeners, check out the Marketplace Confessional. It's online at marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for tuning in and enjoy your day.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.